What's going on, everybody? Randall here, Absolute Veteran, and this is the Veteran Podcast. Soft listening for your soft soul. So it's May 20th, month friggin' whatever of coronification. Crack open a beer. It's back to some army stories. I've been told I need to share a lot more, and I get a lot of emails and messages, especially on the Facebook page, and I appreciate it. I get a lot of questions from dudes either going into the army or just are in this garrison army and haven't got to do anything yet, which I feel sorry for you guys because... Yeah, we're kind of done with the war thing right now, unless you're doing some soft stuff in Africa somewhere or Syria. Not like we're there. We would never hide that. But yeah, I came in post 9/11, where there was two wars going on, you know, plus the Africa stuff, and you were going somewhere all the time. It was a totally different mindset. Garrison Army. It's one reason I'm getting the hell out, because it sucks. It really fucking sucks. It's a totally different mindset, totally different approach to training, different priorities. We've lost a lot of the good leaders because they just can't handle the bureaucratic, sissy army, I'll say. If you have feelings, you're probably not listening to me. So anyway, going back to army stories... I don't really know how I want to arrange these, so I figured I would just start going back to some of the highlights or dark points, however you want to put it. I guess just things that stick out, and then as we go along and as you guys send in specific questions, I will just kind of frame it around that. So as far as the PTSD thing and near-death experiences and just horrible experiences, you know, if you heard the last podcast and some of my other videos, you know that I was in Ramadi from 05 to 06, which at that time was just a total shithole. It was really bad. They had already finished that major push in Fallujah. And actually, it was the second push in Fallujah they finished that year. And so all the bad guys ran to Ramadi, and it was just a shithole. So we lost a lot of guys, period. Good and bad. Bad guys. And it was just a shit place to be, you know. It wasn't a matter of if you were going to get hit or see something. It was a matter of when and where. But once you left your comp or fob, something was going to go down, period. But looking back, there was one event in my Army service and deployments that has stuck with me for a very long time. And it's one of those things, I guess I was lucky enough that I never really remembered my dreams when I woke up. So, you know, when a therapist would ask about nightmares and stuff, I was like, yeah, you know, my wife, girlfriend at the time would say I had some nightmares, but I don't remember them, so they don't bother me. So I guess I was kind of fortunate in that sense. But one thing that still comes up in my mind, I probably think about it once a day, especially depending on what I'm doing, is this car bomb that we had in Iraq, in Baghdad. End of 2003. I want to say very early December or late November. I can't remember. That whole time, you know, that was what, 16 years ago almost. That whole time is kind of fuzzy. But that event is something that I'll never forget. Excuse me. Oh, I'm going to lay off this grunt cough medicine. So. Let's see. So I wanted to share this story because, well, there's a lot of reasons, but I guess because it's one thing that has weighed heavily on me and it affects me a lot. Well, Okay, I'll take that back. I don't think it affects me too much these days, but I still think about it a lot. So Baghdad, Iraq, we're talking about checkpoint one, the main entrance control point to the Green Zone at the time. We all just called it the MOAC, which stood for Mother of All Checkpoints. So this is interesting. We had at the time the largest car bomb in the entire global war on terrorism hit our checkpoint. And I think only a few months later, a bigger one hit some other building down the road. But yeah, it was like a 2,000-pound car bomb, very big boom. Killed a lot of people, 32-something people dead, no soldiers. Sad either way. We'll get into that, but I just wanted to throw this out real quick. It was interesting because this was 04, so around late 2012, I'm with my reserve CA team. We're preparing for Afghanistan mobilization, and a guy that was in Baghdad, I think around 2010, he was on my team going to Afghanistan. And we kept sharing stories of Baghdad, you know, because he was there 6 years after me. So we're just talking about the differences and everything. And every time I would mention my gate, he didn't know the MOAC or checkpoint one to the Green Zone. He would just talk about this massive gate by a bridge on Haifa Street. And I'm like, yeah, dude, did you guys have the Ministry of Planning right there on the corner? And I think it was Bridge 4 going across the Tigris. He's like, yeah, that was Assassin's Gate. I'm like, thinking about it, I'm like, wait a minute. I was Alpha Company 2-6 Infantry, 2nd Brigade out of Baumholder, Germany. We were Alpha Company Assassins. I was like, dude, we were Alpha Company Assassins. Where did the Assassins come from? He's like, oh, yeah, well, I was told they named it after some infantry guys out there that, you know, got blown up by a car bomb or some shit. And I'm like, holy shit, dude, that was us. Because I've never heard of another car bomb hitting that checkpoint. I'm sure people tried to attack it, but not like the one we saw. So that was pretty interesting to hear him refer to it. Blech, excuse me. It was funny to hear him refer to that. And that's, you know, just kind of in that setting so casually. And then we pieced it together and I'm like, holy shit, dude, I was there that day. You know, he's like, oh, okay. Well, that explains a lot. I'm like, yeah, thanks. So anyway, let me just kind of give you a little bit of a backstory. It's 2004, late 2004, Baghdad. It was relatively safe. We had a lot of rockets, these giant rockets coming in. They would just be plastering this really tall building in the Green Zone. I think a lot of like UN workers were there and stuff, but they would just hit this thing. We'd get them every now and then. We had a couple guys wounded by them. Some mortars. You know, and you're always hearing car bombs and stuff go on in the distance. I mean, it's Baghdad, so everything, you're just hearing echoes of shit all throughout the day. But for the most part, I would say it was a relatively decent deployment. You know, I was a 19-year-old single kid, so I got paid to walk around the city with a saw, a machine gun. You know, so life could have been worse, especially considering what I was doing before I went into the army, which was absolutely nothing. So, knowing, you know, that I joined that MOS at a time of war, I kind of knew what I was getting into. So, you know, the danger comes with it. So the point is, it was not too bad of a deployment. It was kind of boring. So this checkpoint was taken over by my unit. They were already there for a few months. I was the cherry that was still going through basic when they showed up. They relieved a unit from 3rd ID and they ran it with just, I don't know, 6 to 9 guys and some concertina wire strung up. And we're talking about a major intersection, okay? Like a 4-lane highway. And it's a T intersection. So coming down Haifa Street, coming a road coming at the checkpoint was, I believe, another 4-lane road. And then maybe a quarter of a mile down, you had this major bridge going across the Tigris River. So a giant checkpoint. It was most of the traffic coming into the Green Zone came through there. Very busy intersection, and of course there were no street lights, so it was, you know, it was chaotic. But if you came in, if you came into the green zone, especially from the Baghdad International Airport, chances are you came into that checkpoint, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. For everybody else, I'm just trying to kind of set it up and paint the picture. So, needless to say, you know, there's thousands of people coming in and out of this gate every day, going to work on the base and stuff, convoys coming in and out. So it's a very high volume traffic checkpoint. And the third ID guys had it with just a few dudes and some concertina wire, a couple machine guns. Our unit, you know, once they realized we were staying for a while, they started to beef up security. They had a vehicle search point behind where you drove in, which was kind of silly looking back. But we still ran it with a squad, I believe, maybe a little more. We had a machine gun position a little bit further back to where that first arch was. If you've been there, you know that arch that you drive under. Cars would line up on the road to come into it in the morning and just back up traffic. Off on the other side of the road, there were hundreds, maybe 1,000 people lined up, foot traffic, to come in the pedestrian gate. There was a gunner's position. There was like a one-story building off to the side of it, right behind where the pedestrians came in. And we had an overwatch position there. And as a saw gunner, I set up there a lot, which was pretty cool because I got a kind of bird's eye view of everything. Never got to shoot anything. It was pretty boring. So we did 12-hour shifts, you know. It was pretty rough. We did a lot of night shifts, and the hardest thing was staying awake and killing the boredom. So, yeah, I think this was early December because I'm pretty sure we had already had our Thanksgiving dinner out there. I could be wrong. If you're one of the guys that was there with me, comment and tell me if I'm retarded because I kind of lost the time frame on this. So we were on, if you weren't on the checkpoint as a platoon, you were running patrols through the city, or you were on QRF, or sometimes you'd be out like babysitting protected target sites or something. So we were just coming off of our last night shift, and then I think we were going into QRF, so, but it was going to be night QRF. So we had downtime that day coming off the checkpoint. And, you know, Baghdad in 0304 was pretty boring. There wasn't a lot to do. The internet sucked. The phone lines were crowded. So a lot of guys would go work out, maybe throw the ball around. We stayed in the, I believe it was Republican Guard Palace, about a half a mile down the road from the checkpoint. It was like you come in the checkpoint, take the first left, go all the way toward the Tigris River, take a right, and the palace was right there. So we were right on the Tigris River. Yeah, it was about a half mile walk, and I remember that walk sucked because as a new guy, you know, they'd hand me the extra MREs, the radio, extra batteries, whatever shit they wanted to throw at me. So I got to carry all my crap, my assault bag that I needed for 12 hours of junk food and cigarettes, and then whatever else they gave me. So it was a pretty far walk. So that was a typical late fall or winter. Oh, man, what season is that anyway? Oh, who cares? Doesn't matter. So typical day in Baghdad. I think we got relieved around 7, which was always weird because that's when the checkpoint really got busy. You know, you got traffic picking up at that intersection. You got all the people trying to get into work, and it was just a busy time. So we walked back. I did my typical routine, which was, taking a shower, clean off my weapon a little bit, pack my bag for whatever else is coming up, trying to be a good infantry private, you know. So I checked my shit out before I did anything else. And then I think I took a shower, laid down, and I was watching Family Guy. I remember that. So around that time in the morning, it was really not uncommon to hear explosions. So depending on how big the boom was or how far away it seemed, that was your reaction to it. So, you know, every now and then there'd be a close one. You're like, oh, shit, okay. Nobody's screaming. All right, we're good. But this morning was very different. So I'm sitting there, just laying there watching Family Guy, kind of dozing off. And then the absolute biggest boom I've ever heard and felt, even after combat in Ramadi, went off. And, I mean, we're in a giant stone palace. And it felt like this palace was going to come down on us. All the windows, if they still had glass left in them, all blown out. Doors blew open, flew off their hinges. Our room was full of dust, you know, and I sat up. We're all like, what the fuck? I stayed in a different room from my squad at the time. I think I was with our second squad downstairs. So, you know, we're all looking around like, holy shit, that was close. What was that? And I went out into the hallway because I was right next to the door. And it was just, you couldn't see, just dust, just black. You know, I could hear people screaming. Outside, I could kind of hear city noise amplified, you know, like lots of car alarms, some screaming. No gunfire, though, so that was good because then we could all tell that we weren't, like, actual, like, under any kind of coordinated attack initiated by a car bomb. So that was kind of helpful. So I knew we were going into QRF, and I came in to, when I was in the hallway, I could hear people screaming that it was the checkpoint. They're like, yeah, you know, the MOAX hit. So I was like, oh shit. Okay. So I come in to put in my stuff, and I think our second squad, the guys in my room, I think they had the day shift before. I don't know what they were up to that day, but they were all putting their stuff on anyway. That's kind of just, you know, what you do if you're not a douchebag. If something's going on, you get ready to go. So I got all my stuff on. I think I linked up with my team leader, a really cool dude, somewhere in the hallway. He's like, hey, you know, we got to go out there, so get out in the front and wait for the rest of the squad. So the rest of the squad comes out there, and by then, it's just total chaos. Guys are running all over the place. There's still dudes coming out of the showers, half naked, some of them naked. You know, it's just mass confusion. So I think by this time, maybe 5 minutes have gone by. It was like, boom, holy shit, get your shit on, get outside, we're ready to go. Squad leader comes out, they get their pre-combat checks and inspections. You know, and it's so confusing, you know, they did a really outstanding job. Our team leaders were really awesome at the time, especially my team leader. He was a really squared away dude. So it's shit like making sure you have your shoes on because it's so chaotic, you know. So the squad leader got the up, and we just started running toward the checkpoint. And that half mile distance felt a lot shorter. I'm pretty sure we sprinted most of it. So we turned the first corner, running away from the Tigris River, and, you know, we can already see, you know, in the distance, I looked toward the checkpoint, it looked like a freaking volcano aftermath. The whole sky was black, just thick, thick black smoke, ashes raining down. There was a lot of stuff, like debris all over the place after we turned that first corner. Just stuff burning, charred stuff. Some of the palm trees had flames in them from shit falling on them. The engine block from the actual car bomb was somewhere in that vicinity. So that thing flew over a quarter mile away and didn't land on anybody, thankfully. So we begin to round the last corner. And I think some guys got ahead of us. But me and my team leader were kind of together, and we rounded that last corner, and it's basically you just take a right, and 200 meters down is the checkpoint. So we rounded that corner, and I remember we just both stopped dead in our tracks because, you know, this is a big checkpoint in a large area, and it just looked like the whole freaking thing was on fire. I mean, I don't even know. Picture a giant intersection in New York City and imagine what that looks like. So Plus, the smoke was a lot thicker. There was a lot more debris and stuff on the ground and stuff like body parts. Body parts that are on fire still, charred body parts you can't make out. Yeah, clothes, all kinds of stuff. So we, you know, my team leader's like, all right, let's go. So we start heading in. And I remember, you know, it was one of those weird times where you're just kind of in a, like a fog of just trying to do something, you know, like you're trained to do. But it's like, what the hell do you do? So, but I remember there's a lot of people running away from the scene and stumbling out of there through the smoke, soldiers and civilians. And it's like, you know, I'm not even trying to be like this, put on this heroic picture or anything, but it's just strange to see people walking away from something like a massive disaster like that. And you're just like, shit, man, should I be going that way? Like, what do they know that I don't know? Am I about to just go die? Because you don't want to run away. You know, you got to follow your men. You got to do what you got to do. But at the same time, you're thinking like, well, fuck, they're coming from there. Like, you know, so I couldn't get anything out of those guys and I had to catch up anyway. Okay, so we get within... You know, we had, there was HESCO barriers with sand and stuff all over this checkpoint. So we get kind of close up toward the front. And by this time we can see, you know, five, six, I think maybe eight. A lot of cars are on fire, just totally engulfed. And then all the other cars in the intersection are either burning just a little bit or they're flipped over or they're a little bit charred. But one thing I remember is everything that was broadsided to this checkpoint was just peppered with shrapnel and stuff. I mean, there was rods and debris impaled into everything. There was a bus in the middle of the intersection. I don't know how people walked off that bus, but that thing was peppered hardcore. It was like Swiss cheese. One of our platoon sergeants actually got a medal with a V device for getting people off that bus. And I don't even know how people survived because they were in the intersection. So we get closer to the checkpoint. We see, you know, soldiers getting checked out. And at this point, I realize I have a combat lifesaver kit on me because I was the CLS dude for my squad. So I'm talking to my team leader, you know, like, what can I do, man? And we look around, there was some medics up there treating stuff. I saw some tourniquets being put on. So I kind of started to treat people as I could. But really, as far as I got was just talking to guys and, hey, you okay? It's going to be okay. Starting to escort them away. And then a medic would come up there and grab them. So I was kind of useless. Which really sucked because, you know, you want to do something. But once a medic shows up, if he doesn't need your help, you go move on and try to do something else. So I got closer to the flames, you know, just where the scene was and was trying to be useful. And I remember there was a medic there really stressing out, you know, at the fires. And I went up to him. And I think me and my team leader separated at this time. I can't remember. But I remember talking to this medic, you know, and he's like, oh, there's people in there. We got to try to get to these people. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, in the fucking cars, dude. And I guess it was blocked out or, you know, because of the adrenaline rush. I just didn't register it. I don't know. But once I started focusing in on the cars, you could actually hear people screaming, you know, burning alive in the cars. You know, every single car that was on fire had, there was people driving them, there were passengers, and they were all burning to death. You know, and I've heard rumors and I've seen in Hollywood shows, you know, some of these burn experts, they'll say, well, your body doesn't even register it. And you pass out from the pain. Well, at least in my experience, that seemed to be complete bullshit, because all we heard was agonizing screams. And that's one reason this event has stuck with me so long, is because those screams, it's the sight, the smell, and the screams. I don't think that'll ever leave me. And I think every year on the anniversary, me and some of the guys that were there talk about it and share pictures and stuff. And I think we all talk about it like we remember it that well. You know, it just smelled like burnt oil, melted metal, garbage, and barbecue. You know, and once you have that familiar smell of barbecue in your nose, then you realize it's people. And it's it's really unsettling to have all those senses like that. But I just remember the screams. Even like, you know, I never want to be the cliche soldier. Oh man, this brings me back to that day in Nam. None of that shit. But people that I do trust and that I talk to about things, anytime we're around a campfire, especially like a large bonfire style, if it's quiet and we're not actively talking, if I'm just sitting there thinking, that's something that I always will mention, you know, because it's on my mind. I'll be staring into the flames, you know. Campfires are like the TV of the woods anyway. You're kind of mesmerized, so you just kind of wonder, and that's usually where my mind goes to. I just look in the flames. It reminds me of these, the brightest orange-looking fires I've ever seen in my life. And just listening to the screams, you know. And it's like when I'm looking at a campfire and I kind of daze out into it, it's like I'm there. I can almost smell it and hear it again. It's really crazy. So, excuse me. But what really sucked about that was, you know, there was plenty of people trying to get to these cars, because by the time we actually got out there and I'm with this medic, not even 10 minutes have gone by. And that sounds crazy, you know, but some of these cars caught on fire immediately. Some of them were kind of smoldering and then would just explode and catch on fire. So not all these people died immediately. Most of them were knocked out from the blast and their vehicle caught on fire. And it was like minutes later, you know, and the fire wakes them up and they're just trapped in there for whatever reason. But the shittiest thing about it all was nobody could get to them. There was no water, no fire trucks there yet. Fire extinguishers were useless. You couldn't even get close enough to try a fire extinguisher. I mean, these flames were so hot. You know, and if you've ever been around a massive bonfire that's been going for a while and has a big-ass hot coal bed, you know what I'm talking about. Just to go up there and stir the coals or move logs around, you need a really long stick, and sometimes you still can't even look at it. You have to look away and poke around, or you lose your eyebrows. Whatever. But these flames were so hot. I mean, you couldn't get near them. And I remember I tried to run at one. I'm like, oh, fuck it. I'm young. I'll just dart at one and just grab somebody. I'll be on fire for a little bit. But it's nature kicks in. I mean, you couldn't get close to them. You're just stopped dead in your tracks. This medic was a little more stressed about it, and he was the closest I saw a dude get to him. He didn't burst into flames, but he stopped dead in his tracks, and as he started to back up, his sleeves were, like, smoking, probably because his sweat, you know, was steaming off of him, but it was that hot. It was just, yeah, no chance. So basically, anybody who wasn't engaged in doing something else knew there were people burning to death in these cars, and there was absolutely nothing we could do. Nothing. So we basically just sat there and watched and listened to people fucking burn alive. Men, women, children, all of it. It was pretty rough. So, let's see. I don't want to miss anything. So another thing was looking around at the damage, I mean, well, let me finish the sequence of events. So the Baghdad Fire Department, mostly American guys with Iraqi counterparts, they show up, they start putting the fires out. By then, everybody's dead. The area is kind of cleared out. But what happened was you had all these civilians from Baghdad trying to come in to, check on their family members, see what's going on, throw rocks at us, yell at us because we suck. So the main objective was to control the area. So we just had guys on foot. We moved some trucks out, keep some kind of perimeter because as we learned later on in these wars, that would be the perfect time for secondary attacks. Which they did all the time in Afghanistan, and later on in Iraq. Didn't happen in 04, didn't happen to us that day, but if somebody would have come up and threw a couple grenades in that initial chaos, they would have taken out a lot more people, no problem. So that was the name of the game, was getting control of the intersection and letting rescue crews do their thing, letting the recovery guys do their thing. So there was, as a private, I'm put on the security perimeter. I'm probably like 10 to 15 feet from the next two guys on my sides. And they're, between talking to Iraqis and just kind of looking around, paying attention, you start to notice all the details. Like all the houses were freaking blown off. The fronts of the houses in the area were blown off. All the windows were out in the entire block. Shrapnel everywhere, just metal everywhere. Light posts cut in half. There was a traffic cop from the Iraqi police that did that intersection every morning, and he was a really cool dude, really nice, very colorful. Even the Iraqis coming through during rush hour would drive through the intersection and wave at him. There was a sign he used to stand next to, and that sign was about where he stood. And that just, I have a picture of it. It looks like somebody just put 100 rounds of machine gun through it, just that much shrapnel through it. But I think his shoe and like half his foot were still where he was standing, and then they found his body about 100 meters down the road. And I just remember looking around, and I've never seen so many body parts, And I don't mean like whole body parts, but you see charred skin, scalps, fingers, like bone fragments, just jelly-looking stuff. I mean, this is a my channel is not for sensitive people, so if you're still listening to this, I guess you could just deal with this how you want. If you're offended, sorry. I don't know how to do the Teletubby version of a car bombing. One interesting thing they found, not far from the car bomb, was they I don't know how they estimated this, but they said a guy from one of the dudes in the car bomb, it was his groin, like what was left of his cock and balls, charred up. And it's funny. This is how dark our humor is as grunts. The joke was, well, he may be going to heaven, but what is he going to do with his 72 virgins without his shit, So, yes, we still joke during those times, and we still have terrible jokes. They assumed it was the bombers because it wasn't totally charred. I guess there's a CSI way to do that. It was still very fleshy, like you could recognize it from like 50 feet away, like, is that a dude's dick and balls? And it was just kind of charred on the edges. But I guess like all the really charred, burnt up stuff was people around the area. I don't know how that works. But it makes sense because the guys in the car bomb, they estimated two people were in it. They get blown from the blast and just get charred on the way out. Everybody outside of it, they get hit with the flames, simultaneously, so it chars them. It doesn't matter, but I remember shortly after that, there was a detail going around with black spray paint. And their job was to put a circle around any possible body part. And I swear, man, by the next morning, the whole place was circles, black spray paint circles. And it's like, yeah, I could have told you that, you know, if that was my job, I'd be like, hey, look, the whole freaking block is body parts. All right. That's all you need to know. Get 400 dudes online holding hands and walk, and you're going to pick up shit. It would be like cigarette butts outside of a bar. They're everywhere, you know. I went up to my Overwatch position later on just to kind of look at things from above. That was definitely interesting, but, you know, there's body parts up there, stuff stuck to trees up there. You know, it took them a long time to clean that stuff up. That stench, that smell of death, it lingered in that area for a long time. Everybody in my platoon got dysentery shortly after that just from the environmental hazards. It was a crazy month after that. But they did beef up that intersection, that checkpoint, big time. They moved the car search part outside of the checkpoint, which made a lot more sense. They added more gunning positions. They put towers up. They added those big old, like, T-walls. I think we called them Jersey barriers, those giant concrete T-walls. Yeah, we didn't have those. We had HESCO barriers just lined up on the front. One of our guys, we had a lot of soldiers wounded, but nothing major. We had one guy that he was pretty messed up. It turns out this guy, is E5, he was the dude that would stop vehicles as they came in and check their visitor's badge or ID card, whatever they were showing. And this guy lived. And the story goes, I've talked to him about this. The story is he actually confronted these bombers. I guess they tried to cut off a, there was like a private security company coming through. And I guess he tried to cut in front of them. And this guy actually stopped them. You know, he said he put his hand on the hood, pointed his weapon at them, and backed them out. And then they actually backed up. And then at some point, he walked around to his little, there was like a concrete kind of booth out there, you know, like a guard shack. And he happened to be right on the other side of that when this bomb went off. So all those contractors were in their SUVs right there. They were all dead. I mean, you could still see AKs, like half melted to them. Rolexes on their wrists. We never even found out who those guys were with. But that was, you know, that was terrible. So probably Americans. The theory that we got from the investigators was, you know, a car bomb of that size, they're assuming they were looking for either to get deeper into the checkpoint, past the barriers to get more soldiers, or that they were trying to hit something inside the green zone. Because the green zone, you know, it's kind of like in that stupid movie. But if you've been there, you know, like the green zone hosted everybody. All diplomats, like UN people, all these big people. So I can't remember this building. There's a really tall hotel. I think it was called the Al Rashid. But that's where all these big wigs stayed. And that's the one that it got the shit rocketed out of it almost daily. It was kind of funny, you know. Because we would see it, we would hear it and watch it where we were, and we'd see it on CNN the next day, and we're like, yeah, no shit, they're in Baghdad. Of course they're getting rockets shot at them. What the fuck you think we're doing over here, you know? But anyway, so they think they might have been going for a bigger target, I guess, with the effort they put into the bomb. But, you know, they would also usually have a secondary trigger man just in case the main dude backed out, or there was some kind of issue. So they actually assumed that the spotter probably saw the truck get backed out and realized that they weren't getting in and decided to blow it. Or maybe he just saw him backing out and thought he was chickening out and said, all right, well, fuck you, you're getting blown up here. Either way, that's how it went down. Yeah, but, you know, talking to that guy, that's creepy, man. The dude had his hand on the hood of the car bomb. And he also helped him confirm that it was two guys in the truck. So, actually, I haven't talked to that guy in a while. I wonder if I could interview him on here if he'd want to do it. He's okay, though. His ears were... He was bleeding out of his ears. And he was in shock. I remember seeing him when I walked up. He was pretty messed up. But last I talked to him, he was doing all right. Yeah, so from there, it was pretty much just cleaning up, pulling a lot of security. A lot of... Everybody was on edge after that. We had a car run into our concertina wire, and me being the young, dumb private saw gunner, I caught a lot of shit for not lighting the dude up. But I'm glad I didn't, because he turned out to be just some drunk idiot that, you know, was claiming he didn't see my tack light being shined at him and all that. Legally at that time, I could have freaking shot that whole dude's truck up, shot his face off, and would have been justified in doing it, because it was like a week after the car bombing on night shift. But I'm glad I didn't, because, you know, looking back, that would probably be fucking me up right now. So, and grunts, we give each other shit for everything anyway, and I was the fucking new guy. So, yeah, of course I got shit. Oh, who the fucking shot that motherfucker? It's like, oh, okay, roger that. So, it was a crazy time, man. I think that's all I have to say about that. That's how the fucking cookie crumbles. Yeah, so, like I said, the smell and the sight and the sounds, that stuff will probably be with me forever. I will always think about it. Every now and then I kind of stop when it hits me during the day, like if I'm doing something with my family or something. I think I've mentioned it to my wife a few times, you know, this reminds me of that day. And my wife is my fucking, you know, she's my savior. I would not be around without her. So she's really cool at dealing with that stuff. She doesn't have to say anything. She knows basically just to, you know, comfort me and just kind of be there and let me run my mouth sometimes. And, but she's saved my ass. So if you guys want to hear some more stories, let me know. I'm going to try to put them up in some kind of decent timeline. I know I've already thrown up some Army stories, but I came in 2003, right after the invasion, so I will try to start going forward from around those times, and I'm sure I'll be like in the 2010 age, and then I'll remember something from 2003. I'll be like, damn it, all right. So you guys just have to deal with that. But you know, if you want to send in, you know, you guys all know how to hit me up on social media. I can't fucking talk tonight. Absolute Veteran on all the social medias. If you want to be personal, I have an email for this shit. It's absoluteveteranofficial@gmail.com. All lowercase, all put together. And hit me up there. I've already gotten a few interesting emails. I'm going to try to figure out how to add them into the podcasts. Or I might actually put them into some of my upcoming videos. Because, some of the guys that are hitting me up regularly, you know, we chat. I answer every single freaking message on all platforms I get, even comments. I answer everything. So hit me up. And I guess until the next time, enjoy life. Get out there and live. Don't let the stupid shit get you down, because you're on borrowed time. And that's the world most people live in, you know. As Westerners, especially Americans, we're fucking lucky to get to just take everything, take advantage of everything. Like, fucking appreciate what you have, man. Appreciate the people you have around you. And I'll see you guys next time. Thanks for listening. Out.